Teacher or dental hygienist is making 50 grand a year and still qualifies.
Also, the mics are on now.
Hot mic.
Really hot mic.
In case you didn't know, the mics are on now. So, I want to thank the people who are here. I'm going to give a short explanation of what we're doing.
Somebody's saying they can't hear.
Can you hear?
No.
You can't hear out there in the auditorium? 1, 2, 3. Can you hear anybody? Is there anybody in the back that can hear?
Better.
Now you got it. Okay. Mics are working now, and you can hear. That's good. So I'm Arnie Roblin. I'm one of the two co-chairs for the Student Success Committee. We are going around the state. This is our last visit. We've been in Baker City, Grants Pass, and Medford, Portland, Hillsboro, Bend. We've tried to get all around the state to gather information from the business community, from students, and at each event we have had a public hearing, some more well attended than this one, but we have been gathering information. I would say if you ask the committee, the students have been really exceptional at every place. We had a meeting this morning with Coquille students. We'll have another one tomorrow morning here at Marshfield with students. We do have some roundtables, education people for roundtables and business people for roundtables. Our goal is by the end of, or before session starts, we will have some legislation to address the issues that we've found around the state and try to figure out how do we make an education system that provides the best opportunity for all kids to succeed. So with that, first thing we do is generally introduce all of the people here at the dais, and so I will give this off to my vice chair. Well, let's have the co-chair. Okay, we'll go to the vice chair and head down the Senate side.
Senator Tim Knope, representing Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River.
Senator Kathleen Taylor, representing Southeast Portland, Milwaukee, and Oak Grove.
Senator Alan DeBoer, Medford, Ashland, to the Applegate Valley in Southern Oregon.
I'm Senator Lou Frederick. I represent District 22. That's North and Northeast Portland, the airport, North Portland, and Lloyd Center.
And I'm Barbara Smith Warner. I have the honor of serving as the House co-chair of this committee. Thank you for having us in Coquille and Coos Bay. We're looking forward to tomorrow's activities as well. I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
I'm Brian Clem, and I represent the center portion of Salem, where the Capitol is.
I'm Sherry Springer from House District 17. I come from SIO, represent some towns such as Lebanon, Sweet Home, Staten, and Detroit Lake.
I'm Diego Hernandez from East Portland, House District 47, and I serve on the Reynolds School Board.
I'm Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass, Cave Junction, Williams.
Hello, I'm Julie Fahey, the state representative from West Eugene, Junction City, and parts of rural Lane County.
And I am Katty McEwen. I represent House District 9. I am the interloper here tonight. I'm not actually a member of this committee, but I wanted to come and welcome all of my colleagues to my House District. So we're delighted to have you here and welcome all you. We're delighted to have you here tonight to talk about things important to education. I sat on the school board here for 11 years, so these are things that are near and dear to my heart as well. So thank you.
So with that, so that people know, this is a public hearing, so we're going to gavel in to a public hearing from the Joint Committee on Student Success here in Coos Bay, Oregon, on the 10th of October. We do have it set up, and I have a few people who are going to testify. Just so people know, anybody who testifies will be part of the permanent public record of these meetings, and so they are being recorded.
Is there any other announcements?
And that there will be 3 minutes to give your opening statements. We hold that so Travis can have as long as he wants. But Travis Howard is the principal here, and we wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to say a few statements about Marshfield and about being here. So, Travis. Well,
thank you. First and foremost, I won't take 3 minutes, but it is nice to have not only yourself, but Caddy, and
Brian. Oh, I need to say your name. Thank you.
Travis Howard, principal here at Marshfield High School. As I was saying, it's nice to have you and Caddy and Brian back. Caddy served on the school board for a long time. Brian's once a pirate, always a pirate. And of course, Arnie spent 16 years?
14 as principal, 32.
14 as principal here at Marshfield. So he knows how special it is. He knows how special this auditorium is to not only us, but our community. And he also knows a lot about the foundation here at Marshfield. And our goal, obviously, is to reach everyone. We want to educate everyone. And we really strive with a lot of different programs that other schools in the area don't have. We've got a very robust CTE program. And we also offer over 30 dual credit or expanded options classes that are actually taught here at Marshfield High School. So that lends itself to a lot of successful students graduating and moving on. In fact, the last couple years, we've actually had students graduate not only with their high school diploma, but their associate's degree as well. So we've got a lot of partnerships throughout the community. We're continuing to build those. Especially in our CTE programs, partnerships with Sauce Brothers, Fred Wall, Marine up in Reedsport is one that we're currently working on, and also with the medical industry here. A new pathway we started with was our health careers pathway a couple years ago, and so we're graduating 20 to 30 students out of that program with a certificate that leads them right into an occupational field or post-secondary education. So we're really proud of being the largest comprehensive high school on the South Coast, and it's really exciting to have you guys here. So thank you.
Thank you. So we'll call, and there's three chairs, so we'll call all the first three people, Lori Nordahl, Kathy Barber, and Peggy Christensen. Come on up. So welcome, and however order you want to go.
You want to go first?
Okay, I'll start. So good evening. I want to thank you for being here tonight, for your hard work, and for listening to our concerns.
Yeah. You are going to give your name.
Okay. I am. My name is Lori Nordahl, and while I graduated from Marshfield High School, I am now the teacher librarian at North Bend High School, and also serve as the district librarian for North Bend School District. I am also president-elect of the Oregon Association of School Libraries. The number of certified school librarians in our state is shrinking. Many studies have been conducted by Keith Curry Lance, and those studies show that a strong library program directed by a teacher librarian does have a positive impact on student achievement. Yet, librarians have been cut over and over. Although small in number, we're mighty. We have created library standards that have been approved by the Board of Education, and we're working on learning goals at grade levels for those standards. We are not, if you look at those standards, you'll understand the role that we have and how it has changed. We are not shushing book collectors and circulators. In addition to promoting reading and literacy, we are active in our building as instructional technology leaders, teaching the students information literacy skills that they need to be active, productive citizens and be college ready. I'm one teacher librarian in my district, which equates to a ratio of one teacher to 2,346 students. We do have non-certified staff in the libraries of the other schools, and they are important, but they do not deliver instruction. OAR 581-22-2340 indicates that schools are required to have a strong library program. And there have been many solutions attempting to do that without a teacher librarian in the buildings, but they fall short because our students are not being directed by someone who has been trained to curate that collection and deliver that instruction in collaboration with teachers to enhance the curriculum. Our library is packed before school, lunch, After school, it's busy all day long. Students come to help, to seek help. They come to seek solace, to find a good book, and to use technology that they do not have access to at their homes. We're doing our best, but we can do so much better for the students in our state. There is a quality education model in place, which includes adequate funding for a quality library program. We need to fund it for all the districts in our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pick it up so you can go.
Okay. My name is Peggy Christensen. I'm the retired high school librarian and district librarian from Coos Bay Schools. I was president of the Oregon Association of School Librarians at the time. Dr. Knorr and his team from ODE went around the state collecting testimonies from different districts, much like you're doing today, to see what it was that people wanted in their schools. And at the time, our executive body of OASL was closely monitoring the input that was given at these different meetings. My basic takeaway was what people wanted was to have a more well-rounded education, and well-rounded was being defined as having more activities, more arts, sports, and libraries. School libraries are not the same places that many people my age have fond memories. Like other disciplines, Oregon school libraries have state-adopted standards to follow, but we find them in the position of, or find ourselves in the position of having to dispel old myths about what a robust and functioning school library program is all about. I currently serve on the Library Standards Committee along with Lori here, and we wrote the grade level learning goals for the Oregon State School Library Standards. So I know firsthand how the library standards intersect with the Common Core state standards. Our committee has identified 9 interdisciplinary practices germane to all disciplines, and we have mapped out how they intersect. We on the committee are so convinced that information literacy skills must be the focus of student learning that we have written our goals up through grade 14, and we have academic librarian on our committee. Librarians teach students lifelong information literacy skills. Whether students are entering college, the workforce, or just becoming a citizen, these skills are vital for making informed decisions. Libraries provide a place where students go to learn, to create, to access the internet, to read, to study, to get help from a licensed professional, or just simply to feel safe. The library is important to everyone on campus, but particularly to the most vulnerable. There's something like 1,250 schools in the state of Oregon, and there are only 160 licensed librarians in them. If, as Oregonians, we really are interested in student success, we must ensure that all our students have access to a strong library program. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy.
So do I need to move
this?
You're fine. Or?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, my name is Kathy Barber. I currently work for Southwestern Oregon Community College. I've been there for 18 years as a parenting and early literacy specialist. Before that, I was a Head Start teacher home visitor for, I worked 18 years at the college, I don't know if I've said that, and I was with Head Start for 13 years. And so Arnie kind of said maybe I could talk about 2 things instead of 1, yeah. If that's possible. I raised 4 children who came to Marshfield, and Arnie was their principal, and that was quite a wonderful experience. So the first thing, I would like to just say some things about early childhood education. I think it is something that people are becoming very aware of, but what we know now from research has really proven that the first 3 years of life, we call it the first 1,000 days, are really setting the infrastructure of the brain. And so what happens is children who don't have the stimulation, the proper environment, or live in stress in the first
1,000 days, the first 3 years of their lives, the brain doesn't function, it doesn't build, it doesn't become structured the same way it would normally. And so then you have a child who has a deficit to begin with. And I will say, at as a Head Start teacher for 13 years, there were times where there was a little three-year-old or four-year-old who came in at the beginning of the year, and we'd spend the year trying to undo some of what this child's life had been like. And I'm not saying that, you know, all Head Start children had a difficult time, but sometimes it is a low-income program, or for children with high needs, and so sometimes they had some barriers to, you know, the most optimal upbringing. And what we know now is that that infrastructure, once it's in place in the young brain, that does have a lot to do with where the child goes forward. And we know that the first 3 years of life are the most critical. Actually, the first year is the most critical. And sometimes people call that a lost year, because a lot of families don't realize, it's all new brain research, so a lot of people don't realize that first year is so important. And they think, oh, it's a baby. Baby doesn't know what's going on. But that first year has a huge impact on the brain structure. And then going forth, the first 3 years is really important, and then on to the fifth year. And then what happens is children enter kindergarten either ready to learn and with the brain infrastructure in place, or not. And we also know from the research that whatever kind of readiness the child has in kindergarten can predict whether they graduate from high school, it usually can very closely correlate to how well they do in 11th grade. So where a child's vocabulary is in kindergarten is often the percentage of vocabulary they have in 11th grade. So what we're just learning now from the new brain research is that those first years are that critical. And so that's my first message. My second year is what I do for a living right now, is I'm part of the Oregon Parenting Education Collaborative Network around Oregon. Have you heard of the OPEC hubs? We have many OPEC hubs in the Ford Family Foundation, Oregon Community Foundation, Meyer Memorial Trust, and Collins Foundation support that. And the Hallie Ford Center at OSU is where the command center is. And so we have these OPEC hubs that do parenting education all around the state. And so if you want to influence the first 3 years of life and the first 5 years of life, where do you need to begin? And so I'll be just a little more. There is Ariel Khalil from the University of Chicago did a presentation for an OPEC conference a couple years ago. And one of the things that struck me the most was that she said, her research and data shows that children spend 87% of their time from birth to age 18 with their parents and guardians. And we all kind of said, no, that can't be. And she said it was their waking hours. We're like, no, they're in childcare, they're in school. And I've talked to her since then and said, come on now, let's talk about this. And she said, no, you have to figure mornings and weekends and after school and Christmas break and spring break and summer vacation. Children spend 87% of their waking hours with their parents or guardians. And what is the quality of that time like? And so that is the variable, that is the game changer. If we can improve the quality of the time children spend with their families, we will change everything for those children and their trajectory going forward. And she said that was children who don't start preschool or daycare until they're age 3. And so I asked her, well, what about children who start as an infant? She said it's still over 80% of their time is spent with their families. So I would urge you to think about, when you hear about the OPEC hubs and the work they're doing and the stuff going on at the Hallie Ford Center, to try and think of how that can assist the Early Learning Division and the other folks who are working on impacting children in those young years, because that is what will change the course of the future for your generation that's coming up. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So I saw a few other people had come in. If anyone else would like to testify, they're welcome to come on up and take a seat. and we'll give you a couple moments to make a decision if you want to come up and talk. And if not, do we see someone coming? Yeah, come on up. And thanks for being here.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm not prepared at length for this. I just found out about this meeting a little while ago, but this opportunity to speak with you for a moment. But I'm a parent of two kids in the Coos Bay School District.
And your name?
Jim Homestead. Excuse
me. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
We have one student at Madison Elementary, and then we have one that is presently in the ORVA program at home. He was, last year, he was at Sunset. Issues that I'd like to bring to your attention, or maybe you could discuss, think about. But first of all, we went from a very organized, very controlled grade school to a middle school that is absolute chaos. The noise level is, you can't stand it. I don't know what all has changed, but our son couldn't function in that much chaos. I mean, chaos in the halls. One example we had was, there was at lunch that the principal was trying to hand out awards. It took her fourth grade lunch, fifth grade lunch, and the sixth graders were coming in, and she still could not get out over like a half a dozen names. Some sort of proactive discipline, something. I know we're bound by disciplinary, lots of rules and whatnot, but so much is lost in our students' productivity by the bad behavior of those that are not under control. My son's bright. He did almost nothing last year. We're catching him up for this year. But there's so much loss. The meek are just trampled. And the ones that go with the flow are becoming what we watch. We're very well-behaved kids in grade school are just in part of the flood of the behavior deal. And there is so much. I know the frustration for teachers, frustration for students, and we're not the only ones that pulled out. That there's just the meek we have, you know, we know like type kids, but they just don't survive that well in this chaotic environment, and there's no handle on it. I mean, I think our administrators or whatever, we need to look into avenues to seize it and control it. I mean, like coming in, but it's just an environment of chaos. It's just so much lost. Another one is an issue we have is we hear a lot about meeting students where they are. Okay, we see that, and to bring up and catch up, and I'm very proud or pleased or in a consensus to help all, but we have found that if you have an advanced child, it's very difficult to meet them where they are. I mean, one of ours, the youngest one, she's very self-assured, she's advanced, she reads it, she's in second grade, she reads at fifth grade level. Well, she's the student helper often. And she's set by kids that are behavioral problems because she moderates things. But I'm really tired, impatient with sacrificing the well-behaved and the advanced for a medium. I mean, we can do more in weekends than she gets out of school. Okay, it's just that every time I hear, meet you where you are, it's contemptuous for me because you're not meeting my kids or others that we see. And then to ask them, I mean, we've bumped and we have had some very good teachers and very nice people, but it is a lot of work. And then it's overcome and but to really meet them where they are and have a proactive or progressive program is, I mean, I know it's been elusive. I was in a progressive program when I was in first grade. Well, then at second grade, it got dropped. And same with my older kids. They were in the same, we've got to ask for a commitment, they get dropped. But I think we're wasting a lot of good students that get bored and they change behavioral problem, you know, they get lost. And if they're not challenged, you know, or not kept up, and they're not advocated for, we're really strong in this school district. I mean, we go to a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of kids that don't have a free advocate that can come, or that will take off work, or be even allowed to take off work and come meet. And that goes to another, I know I'm sure out of time, but another one, I would love to see if at all possible, some sort of an advocate that's available in off hours. Because we're really trying to promote parental involvement. I suggested to Madison, put the sign-up sheets or the background checks right there at registration. And they put the iPads out and their background checks have climbed. I mean, there's been times where we didn't have a parent one other than us that had a background check could even go with the kids. But that's changed. I mean, that's helped. But if we had an advocate or some program, even a part-time or something that would be available in off hours, as I know that staff's stretched, but it could convey your deal and follow up during the day and then get you an answer back. Because there's a lot of kids that need something, and it can be, we've seen issues with bullying and all sorts of things, and I mean, not that it's rampant there, but so you could get an answer and have an ear, and then at least a follow-up, and then help connecting schedules and appointments or whatever. But it's very difficult. I mean, I've stood there, been there before school, taken off of work. And our kids haven't had that many difficulties, but the accessibility is difficult. And then, if I might have just a moment more. I think that's the most of it. But these kids that are the meek, we need to have a plan to protect them. I mean, we see my boy was poked in the stomach and here and bullied around a bit, and he complained. And he goes to authority with respect and expectation of authority. And he was met with, what did you do to make her do that? Well, she already knew him, that he was not a problem. He was respectful, and if he had an issue, he would have come and spoke to her and then asked for resolve within the citizenship and within the rules of our society. We want them to be successful within this school. That's why I've always done it. So that there is an ear, that there is a forum, and there is, so you don't take it into your own hands. But it's, I don't know, it's very difficult, I understand, but the discipline program or protection, another example is like some of this violent stuff where they curtailed or they did not prosecute. I can't hardly believe that they would let victims be unprotected. Victims over and over and over, while this person created a career of violence and aggression where anybody would allow it to happen. And even in a much smaller case with our kids at school, they need to be heard, protected first. Protected from the behavior, protected from physical aggression. And, you know, like I say, we also heard, well, they have issues at home. Well, my kid shouldn't get pushed around and bullied for any reason. It should be stopped and then deal with them and with courtesy, with kindness, compassion, but don't let kids be victimized or sacrificed for the median. Anyway, that's my rant, but honestly, it's an appeal for you, someone to hear and maybe on the back burner, but think about the discipline, because I know there's so much lost in the behavioral issues.
Thank you for that. We have had a lot of conversations about school safety at all of these levels, so thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yep. I saw a few other people had come in. If there's other people who would like to testify, come on up.
Oh, I think my wife's going to be good.
And Kim, thanks for being here.
I can both
just come on either way. Come on either way.
We can both come at once.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name's Tracy Skinner, and I am the executive director for South Coast Family Harbor, our local relief nursery. And I just wanted to be here on their behalf. And is that me?
Yep, that wasn't you.
Okay. to ask you to please remember relief nurseries and the importance they play, especially in our rural communities. Kathy spoke very eloquently earlier about early learning. And I'd just like to tag on to that a little, that the relief nurseries are not only serving those same children, but they're also serving children that have been highly traumatized. And there seems to be a never-ending list here of families that need help. And the issue of funding continues to be a problem. Also, I'd like to ask you to keep in mind the lack of childcare and what an issue that is for our community, especially for infants, and if there's anything we can do to help families out, that would be extremely beneficial to our community. We are working with the Ford Family Foundation right now on a grant that would help the relief nursery to take in and start an infant program that would do infant care and then work in later to a relief nursery infant program. But I think those are very important things for our community. Thank you.
And thank you for all your work to get it in Coos Bay. So thanks.
Hi, I hadn't planned on talking tonight. I'm Arlene Roblin, and I'm a retired educator, teacher for 10 years, and then administrator for 14 years. So I'd like to talk to you about what I saw in school that I don't think has changed. And with the adoption of the Common Core, our teachers spend so much time focusing on Common Core because their students are not only judged by how they do on the testing, but the teachers are judged and the school is judged. So much time is spent on that. I believe it's an inordinate amount of time. And my concern, like yours, is about keeping kids in school. And I know attendance has been a big focus of yours. And one of the things I think that happened when we got so focused on the Common Core and the standards is that we lost specialists. We lost partly because of funding, but also because of what we could fund. So the arts are gone from elementary schools pretty much, except for what the classroom teacher will do. We have no more music, we don't have art specialists, we don't have after-school sports like we had many years ago. We don't have theater, that kind of thing. And I'm talking about elementary. In the upper grades, it's an elective, but then it's an elective for those kids who have that focus anyway. And the arts keep kids in school. When you find what you're good at and you have a passion for it, you want to come to school every single day. You don't want to miss out on that. And so I would just advocate for looking at that and examining it. And if we want to keep kids in school, we need to get them there by making them feel like they belong. And we know that now, I thought at Madison, we have kindergartners who are intellectually dropping out because they're not finding their own niche at school. And when that happens, when they start mentally dropping out in elementary school, we don't keep them through high school. So I just would offer that. Thanks.
Thank you, Bo. Again, is there anyone else that would like to come up and make a statement with regard to things that we should look at in education as we get ready to do our work? I'm not seeing anyone else come forward. Have any questions? Okay. So with that, if there's no one else, then we are going to close the public hearing of the Student Success Committee here in Coos Bay, Oregon on the 10th. And we thank everybody for being here. Did I beat you?